I'm Paul Harris, filling in for McGraw this morning. Thanks for listening. We got an amazing story for you this morning. It's the true story of a guy by the name of Titanic Thompson, a guy you may not have heard of. And in his years, he was born in the late 19th century and lived to 1974. In his years as a con man, as a hustler, and as a gambler, he would have preferred that you not know who he was. Because, you know, knowing who a con man is makes it harder to be a con man. But a lot of people are going to know the true story of Titanic Thompson now because of my next guest, Kevin Cook, who's written a book all about him. Kevin, welcome to the Big 550 KTRS.
Hi, Paul. Thanks.
I was looking at the page for your book on Amazon, and there are reader reviews on there. And one of the reviews is by Latrice Thomas of Bedford, Texas, who says, "This is the best book ever written about my dad. True insight into the life of a professional gambler. I was with him when he made three holes in one on par three golf courses when he was in his early 70s. He was a professional gambler and card shark for 32 years. I can tell you, in the world of gambling, there's never been anyone like him." That's got to make you feel good to have the subject of your book's child write that about your book.
Well, that's true, and he's such a remarkable character, and there's been so much legend about him that for years I had wanted to go and disentangle the legend from the fact. And Titanic Thompson was the greatest American con man, the best gambler there ever was. Anybody who's seen the show Guys and Dolls with Marlon Brando playing Sky Masterson, that character is based on Titanic Thompson. But it's remarkable that people don't know the real Titanic. And he was such a colorful figure, and a quotable one. For instance, he would make two or three holes in one and one trip around a par three golf course. And when someone would say, "That's amazing," he'd just shrug and say, "Well, that's what I was aiming at."
Now, the key to this is, you know, you called him a gambler there for a second, and he did gamble sometimes. But most of the times when he was making a proposition bet against somebody or a bet on anything, he always knew he had the best of it. There's a story in here about a town where he goes to and he hears about a guy who's really good at horseshoes. Well, I'll let you tell the story.
Well, that's true. I mean, one thing Titanic would do would be make sure that he got the better side of the bet. And against Frank Jackson, a champion horseshoe player, Titanic would go into town, and this is kind of a long con. He set up a horseshoe pit of his own right in the dirt alleyway behind his little hotel and practiced there until people started to notice. Who's this fellow came in town throwing horseshoes, doing better and better, seemed to get a lot of ringers. He finally challenged the great champion and put up $1,000, a lot of money at the time, lost the first time, as Titanic often would, and then said, "Well, I was unlucky that time. Let's play for 10 times as much." At that point, Titanic wins. And the other player, Frank Jackson, the champion, is wondering, why was he so weak today? What was the matter with him? He just wasn't able to throw the horseshoe as effectively as before. And what he never knew until years later was that Titanic had built that horseshoe pit a foot longer than regulation and practiced so that he was used to throwing it 41 feet instead of 40.
So he could get the ringer because he had practiced the extra distance, and the pro who had practiced his whole life at 40 feet, every time he would throw it, he'd end up a foot short.
That's right, and a lot of Titanic's secret was practice. He was a terrific athlete, a wonderful golfer. He would play you lose to you maybe for $500 playing golf and then say, "Look, I got so many bad bounces, let's play for more. I'll even play left-handed." Well, he's a natural left-hander, and of course he's going to beat you that time.
He was just as good lefty as he was righty, wasn't he?
He was, and he was at one point thought to be maybe the best left-handed golfer in the world. Tommy Bolt, Byron Nelson, Ben Hogan, a lot of famous PGA Tour pros had run into Titanic out on the trail. In those days, those fellows would play on the early PGA Tour and maybe win $10,000 a year. These are Hall of Famers, Hogan and Nelson. Well, Titanic would be playing for $10,000 per hole somewhere against the richest man in town. He was often asked why he didn't play the Pro Tour, and he said he couldn't afford the cut in pay.
Now, you talk about a whole bunch of famous people. You just mentioned some of them from the world of golf there. He also ran into a young Mexican with a Dr. Pepper bottle early on and worked him into one of his cons. Who was that?
That's true. That was Lee Trevino before anyone knew Lee Trevino. Titanic set up a secretly famous, really, a lot of old-time golfers will still tell you about it, a big money match in El Paso between the very young unknown Lee Trevino and the PGA Tour rookie Raymond Floyd. They played a furious match for 3 days on parched Texas fairways with guys in pickup trucks playing a radio rolling right down the middle of the golf course. And it comes down to the third day. They both got long eagle putts. And I always hate to give the results away, but it's pretty dramatic at the end. And, of course, Titanic in his day ran into Harry Houdini, and they compared card tricks. And he conned Al Capone, which you don't do very lightly.
I'm going to stop you right there, Kevin, because I want to talk a little bit about his relationship to gangsters. I mean, he double-crossed Arnold Rothstein, the guy who had fixed the 1919 true. Black Sox World Series, and he knew these guys very, very well. How was it for him to be in a world where, yes, he was a con man who was used to taking money away from rich people and then using it for whatever it was he was using it for, usually for teenage girls who he would eventually marry. But how was it for him to be in the world of these guys who were really, really, really bad guys like Capone?
Well, when we're talking about the 1920s and 30s, of course, if you go into some town, where is the money? Al Capone has the money. A lot of the prohibition money, this is just stacks of cash. And Titanic is going to be drawn to stacks of cash. He once came into New York City with well over $100,000 just in his suitcase. He also was able to defend himself. In those days, you carried a gun. He carried a gun in a shoulder holster just in case the game got hijacked. There are burglars who want your money. But he did know how to keep his skin intact, and that would be not to hurt someone like Al Capone too badly. So he beat Al Capone for $500. All of those guys were big gamblers. They loved to play cards. A lot of them played dice. Capone was a big poker player. So after taking Capone for very low money in Titanic and Capone's terms, Titanic was smart enough to get out of Chicago.
Well, obviously taking money from Capone wasn't a good thing, but did he ever gain the respect of these people where even if he conned them or beat them in a game, they would think to themselves, okay, you know what, we have kind of the honor among thieves here?
Well, that is exactly what happened, and there was a code. I mean, I think in these days, today, we might encounter people who would not even pay off to Titanic, but in those days, the gambler followed a certain honor code, which was if the fellow beats you, even if he had a trick up his sleeve, if he beats you by the terms of the bet, then you pay off. Titanic did this in one case against a boxer. He said, you couldn't knock me down if we were standing on the same newspaper. Well, Titanic had figured out that if you go over to a doorway and spread out the newspaper on the floor and then shut the door, the guy's on the other side of the door. He's going to have a hard time knocking you down. Titanic won that, and the boxer paid off. He had another famous bet about saying he could drive a golf ball more than 500 yards. He didn't say when he was going to do it. This was in Chicago, waited until December, and said at one point he looked up from a card game and said, well, I feel it. I feel it now. They go out to the lakeside golf course. He turns around the other way and hits the ball in the frozen lake. So you could always count on Titanic to have a trick up his sleeve, but the one thing was, a lot of these guys got to tell that story for the rest of their lives. It's a very colorful story. You lost a bet to the famous Titanic Thompson.
So they might have been upset with losing the money, but at least they could, oh, man, I fell for it. Okay, here you go.
That's true, and he was chased later on in his life after, as you mentioned earlier, he did say to Damon Runyon, who wrote Guys and Dolls and wanted to write his own life story, Titanic said, no, mine isn't the kind of business that publicity helps. But later in his life, he was so well-known that people would want to play him just so they could say they got skinned by the famous Titanic Thompson.
Talking with Kevin Cook, who has written a book called The True Story of Titanic Thompson, The Man Who Bet on Everything. I'm Paul Harris here on the Big 550 KTRS. You know, you talk about people who fall for these things, and you think, well, how could somebody fall for that, especially when the guy is the one who proposed the bet? But I can tell you, I was playing poker at one of the casinos here in town a couple of years ago, and a guy came through, and he was playing in the game, and nobody really kind of knew him, but somehow the conversation turned around to basketball, and he started talking about being able to make three-point shots and was willing to bet people on, you know, could he make 75 or 80 out of 100 from the three-point line? I'll get my own rebounds and all that sort of stuff. And the more he kept talking, he would get a couple of guys at the table who'd be interested. You know, let's go over to a gym right now. There's a 24-hour place we can go to, and I don't think he can do it. And, you know, they were going to put thousands of dollars on the line. And I didn't say a word, but the whole time I was thinking to myself, the man has proposed the bet. When he proposed the proposition bet, he ain't bringing it up because he knows he's going to lose. And by the way, anytime somebody proposes a bet like that and says, well, I have a basketball in my car, then why would you say, okay, let's go and take him on? But that's exactly what Titanic Thompson did all the time.
That's true, and we do live in a more suspicious age, I think. But
not suspicious enough.
In some of those cases, I think guys are the prospect of that kind of action is so interesting, it's almost worth it just to see how he's going to pull it off.
Now, tell me a little bit about one of his other talents, which was playing pool, and the relationship with the guy who I guess became legendary because of the movie The Hustler, played by Jackie Gleason in that movie, and that's Minnesota Fats.
That's true. Minnesota Fats was a huge fan of Titanic's. He was a better pool player than Titanic's, but nobody, of course, could set up the bet any better than Ty did. And Titanic would set up a remarkable trick shot and win that way. Minnesota Fats admired him so much he called him the original action man and said that Titanic was so brilliant that he made Sir Isaac Newton look like a bellhop. he was by no means the best pool player, but he would always set up the bet perfectly. He could win a bet at any time of day. He lost when they first got together almost $1 million to Minnesota Fats, but then they teamed up, went out on the road, and won it all back and more.
So there was also, we talked about the honor among thieves with these horrible criminals. There was also some sort of mutual admiration society between these great con men?
There was among the greatest of them, the ones that they really admired Titanic, both for his athletic talent, which was genuine, for the way that he would practice. I mean, he practiced throwing cards for endless hours in his hotel room. Ray Floyd told me about how mesmerizing it could be to watch Titanic flip a card across a room into a hat again and again and again. He would win bets in restaurants by saying he could use a playing card to cut off the stem of a flower across the room. Now, he didn't say how many times he was going to throw the playing card. He was so accurate that he could throw card after card after card, hit the same spot on the stem of a flower until it toppled just like a big tree in the forest.
Wow. Now, I love some of the stories in here, and you talked about how hustlers respected him. What about when he would go into a town and somebody would try to hustle him in a pool hall or on a golf course or that sort of thing? Did he end up getting hustled very often?
Not very often. He would turn it around. He did have, and he would usually get the last laugh. He had one time when he was kind of stalking Howard Hughes. He always wanted to play golf against Howard Hughes, who fancied himself a great golfer. Titanic saw a big score in that, and so he was beating some of the other fellows around at the same club in Hollywood. And then one of them brought in a ringer who was a great champion from the Midwest that nobody had heard of, who did beat Titanic, but then what happened was Titanic doubled the bet, stepped up his game in a way that really only a great golfer could have done one by one, and they walked off the course arm in arm, and again he had won the admiration of another golfer purely for his skill in that case.
And when that would happen, would you mentioned that he teamed up with Minnesota Fats in pool games. Would that happen with other golfers as well? I'm going to take you on. We'll go on the road together, and they'd work a con as a team?
It did. He traveled with Lee Elder, who was unknown at the time. Later, he would be the first black golfer to play in the Masters, and in those days, not only did you not see a black man and a white golfer traveling together through Texas, but nobody expected that they would be partnering. They thought that Lee Elder, the black golfer, was the caddy, which is what Titanic passed him off as. He would lose to you on purpose and then say, I'm so angry, I'll tell you, that fellow over there, that caddy, could beat you. He'd win that way. He also had a wonderful long con in which he heard about a golfer who beat Jack Nicklaus in the Ohio Amateur. This is how long ago it was. Nicklaus was still a teenager. Titanic called the young fellow and had him ride a tractor next to a golf course in the prairie states, and had the fellow, again, just back and forth, wearing overalls and a tractor until the day came when Titanic had his mark set up. He said, you can even choose who my partner is, and I'll play you. We'll play for $10,000 and beat you. So they looked around, nobody else around. They point across, congratulating themselves for their brilliance, went across the fence at the fellow on the tractor and said, oh, that farmer, he'll be your partner. Of course, he climbs off the tractor and shoots 67 in his overalls.
Now, anybody who's seen a movie like White Men Can't Jump, this is what Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson were pulling off at times in playground games. Or, you know, you mentioned the Frozen Lake shot. If anybody saw the movie Tin Cup, there's a bet between Kevin Costner and Don Johnson at one point, and Don Johnson hits the ball down a long paved road, and it just bounces and bounces and bounces. I guess inspired by that same sort of story from Titanic Thompson, right?
Definitely. If you think back on Tin Cup, Gary McCord, the fine golf announcer for CBS with the handlebar mustache, is a great longtime fan of Titanic and tells Titanic stories all the time. That scene was very directly based on Titanic's hitting the ball out on the lake.
So is Titanic's story that you tell in your book going to become a movie now, Kevin?
It should be. It's been optioned. I think it's that's a process. But he's such a cinematic character. He's such a charmer that I think a lot of people have said that a younger Clint Eastwood would have been the ideal Titanic. I think anybody with the charisma to charm you out of your socks, I think there are a lot of people who could play the guy, and I really do hope to see it in the movies one day.
There's one part of his story that bothers me, and that's because I'm a poker player, as I mentioned before, mm-hmm. and that is the fact that he was a guy who cheated at poker. When he would deal off the bottom or deal seconds so they could give people whatever cards he wanted to. He would mark cards in the days when the cards were made out of paper and not plastic. All those sort of things. Was he actually any good if we were sitting down in a legit game? Was he any good as a poker player, or was it just because he was cheating at the game that he could make money?
Well, he was. He was friends with the great Doyle Brunson, Texas Dolly, as well as Amarillo Slim Preston, both of whom admired him. They did not consider him a world-class poker player. He was kind of, they were more like Minnesota Fats in pool, and Titanic was one level down. Great enough that if he sneaked an advantage on you, he's going to beat you. But he never liked playing in Las Vegas. He actually hosted the very first World Series of Poker, in which the first prize was not in the millions of dollars, it was a handshake and a little trophy.
Yep.
But he never liked the way that that poker was set up in Las Vegas because he said it'd be better off letting me cheat you rather than the casinos. He was gonna beat you, and in those days, if you're Texas Dolly playing Titanic Thompson, you kind of wink and say, I'll lose a couple of small pots to him just because he's the legendary Titanic.
Mm-hmm. But Thompson didn't like Vegas because that was set up so that the house had the advantage, and he only wanted to play in places where he had the advantage.
That's right. If you're going to be a sucker, then give your money to him rather than to Steve Wynn.
Well, it is a great story. I'm going to ask you to tell one more story here, which you kind of glazed over a little bit, which is how he beat Al Capone in a con outside with some fruit.
Titanic would have said Al Capone was no all-day sucker, so you had to be on your toes with him. They had they tricked a fellow downstairs by turning the lights off. He was a drunk who fell asleep between hands. They turned the lights off on him, and he woke up and thought he was blind. Then Capone and Titanic walk out laughing, having a good time, and Titanic said, you know, I could take a lemon off that fruit vendor stand right there and throw it over that five-story building. And now he had already planted that lemon by paying the fruit vendor the day before. Lemon had some buckshot in it, so it's about as heavy as a baseball, much easier to throw. Titanic got all ready to do it, and Al Capone was just as suspicious as you would have been if this guy had said, I'm going to give you this proposition bet. Capone said, oh, wait just a second. Okay, we've got a bet. Use this lemon. I'll pick out the lemon. So Capone takes a lemon, squeezes all the juice out, hands it over. This thing isn't going to go across the street. At that point, Titanic figured he didn't have much chance. You can't double-cross Capone. So he did a little two-step, a hop and a jump. His coat, his jacket that he's wearing, the lapels are flying left and right. And, of course, being Titanic, he was prepared. He had yet another lemon with buckshot in it in his pocket. He palmed that like a magician and threw that over the five-story building across the street, at which point Capone just shook his head and said, you are a versatile SOB.
But didn't kill him for that.
No, he didn't. He got out of town before before Al got too angry at him, and he made a point not to beat Al out of enough money to really hurt Al Capone.
Well, I'm going to tell you, if you like movies about con men, like, you know, The Sting or Confidence or any of those, or the kind of stories that we've told before that we referred to earlier, or you just want to read unbelievable stories about a guy who would go from town to town, who, by the way, lived in an era where communication between towns wasn't as instant as it was today, which was a big benefit to him, right?
It really was. I mean, Titanic could go into town and be an unknown. Each town was an island to him. Today, the word would have gone out ahead. J. Edgar Hoover was just starting the FBI in Titanic's day. I actually found through the Freedom of Information Act a cable that Hoover had said, Titanic Thompson is coming to your town. And that's the kind of thing that would have slowed Titanic down in our day.
Yeah.
But he could sail from town to town, and each one was new to him.
Nowadays, the word would go out on Twitter, and somebody would know everywhere instantly.
That's true. So he'd have to figure out some way to game Twitter. I think he probably could have done it.
He'd get 141st character in there somehow.
There it is.
We don't know. Anyway, if you like right. that sort of stuff, this is a great read. It's called The True Story of Titanic Thompson, the Man Who Bet on Everything. Kevin, thanks for sharing some of the stories this morning.
Thanks, Paul. Enjoyed it.
And, of course, there's a link to it on my website, which is harrisonline.com. Have a Merry Christmas. It's 9:35 at the Big 550 KTRS.